Our next case, 10-1431, Dennis Dominish versus Nationwide Insurance Company. Mr. Dublikar.
Morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Ralph Dublikar, and I am here this morning on behalf of the defendant appellant, Nationwide Insurance Company, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if it please the court. This is a case where the trial court granted summary judgment to Nationwide, and then the Court of Appeals reversed that decision on a 2-to-1 basis. We are here this morning asking this court to reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and to reinstate the decision of the trial court and render final judgment in favor of Nationwide. The case involves a property loss that occurred on July 28, 2006. The plaintiff filed this lawsuit on July 25, 2008, which was just short of 2 years after the loss. The policy provided that suit must be brought within 1 year from the date of loss, and that was admittedly not done. Policy provision in question was titled Suit Against Us.
But it says action in that clause, does it not?
It does.
It doesn't say suit, it says action.
It does.
So the question before us, what does action mean?
Right. Well, in conjunction with the title of the paragraph that says suit against us, and then it goes on to say no action may be brought. Unless all of the provisions of the policy have been complied with, and any action shall be started within 1 year after the date of loss or damage. So while it is true that the word action is used, and that is the issue that must be determined, it also, we believe, that must be read in conjunction with the title of that provision, which indicates that it is titled Suit Against Us.
Is there a requirement that a request is made to the insurance company and a rejection has to occur before suit can be filed?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think there's any requirement that there has to be any particular, if I understand your question correctly, that there must be, I think what you're asking me
a
is
demand, a rejection, and then that's part of the process before suit can be filed.
I don't think there's a requirement in the policy of that nature. However, I believe, in fact, that's exactly what was done here. There was at least twice the insurance company tendered a check and indicated that this was a partial denial of coverage
What do you make of the communication to the appellee here that we will continue to evaluate this? There
right.
was a assurance, I think, in the second or third letter, kind of leaving it open-ended.
Before the 1 year expired? You're referring to a letter that before the 1 year
I think there were three
expired.
Letters, were there not?
Yes.
Okay.
Before
and
the
each,
1 year, yes.
And each, before the 1 year?
Yes.
And each one of them referred to the $6,000-plus check
right.
that was being tendered.
Right.
Then there was the statement that we're going to keep investigating. In essence, we're going to keep taking a look at this.
Sure.
This might not be the only opportunity you have to recover is the way I would translate that.
Right. And, in fact, two things on that point. The first one is that the law of Ohio, based upon this court's prior holdings, is that the willingness and the representation of continuing investigation does not constitute a waiver. And secondly, in those same letters, the insurance representative was very clear that the continuing investigation did not, in fact, constitute a waiver of any provisions under the policy.
And the letter, the last letter, was sent after the year's time.
Well, there were three letters before the 1 year, and then there was another letter sent after the 1 year period.
And the one after the one year period referenced continuing investigation.
It said that they would be willing to consider any other information that might be provided.
And how could that be possible if the statute, or excuse me, if the time limit had expired?
Well, because there is no time limit for continuing investigation or negotiations of the loss. I mean, there.
So you're saying that Nationwide is holding out the hope that apparently, even though they're not required to because of the clause in their contract saying that you have 1 year, even if you don't file, out of the goodness of our heart,
right,
we may want to reimburse you.
Right, because two reasons. Number one, in the case of Metz versus Buckeye Union Insurance Company, which was a Ninth District Court of Appeals case that we've cited in our brief, the court called that a gratuitous act mm-hmm. on the part of the insurance company at that time. Secondly, I think that it would be good business practice for the insurance company to be willing at least to consider and try to resolve a case with their customer policyholder if they could. The flip side of that, which I did not mention in the brief, but I think is extremely important, the Court of Appeals below suggested and in fact said Nationwide should, at once the 1 year period ended, Nationwide should have just closed their file and said, we're done, we're not even going to talk to you anymore. I'm not sure that the public policy of Ohio should be such that an insurance company or that the message should be sent that, once the 1 year period is over, we want the insurance company to just close their file and stop talking to their policyholder. I think, if anything, the public policy should be, if you can continue to work toward resolving this claim, try to do so. But that doesn't mean that by doing that, you're waiving the policy provisions of the 1 year. I think if the court were to say that by sending that letter in August after the 1 year period had expired, that constituted a waiver, then what the court is essentially saying to the insurance companies and the insurance industry in Ohio is, do not do anything after the 1 year, because if you do, we're going to hold that you've waived your 1 year provision.
Or in your letter, say, even though your opportunity to sue us has expired, because you're a policyholder of longstanding or this is the company policy, we will continue to negotiate and do not construe this as a waiver. Right. I mean, there's ways of stating it,
sure,
that would have been clear and accomplished both. So it's not a drop-dead type of a scenario, and that's your only option. If Nationwide really was going to continue to do this, there were ways that they could have both informed their client, or excuse me, their customer, and also maintained their position that this was gratuitous.
Right. That they could have done that, and obviously in this case they did not raise that 1 year mm-hmm. provision in that letter. However, I would point out that in the letter of September of 07, the representative did in fact caution and represent to the policyholder that there was this 1 year provision, and explained it to the fact that this means that you must file suit within 1 year if in fact you want to do, if we don't resolve this claim. So in
Mr.
addition,
Dubaker, that's the question I have. You just said suit must be filed within 1 year. But the language I'm reading says any action must be started within 1 year. Where does the term start come from? And why doesn't it say filed in a court of competent jurisdiction within 1 year?
Well, I would say that I think the first part of your answer, or the answer to the first part of your question, is that there are three components to that provision. And I don't think that it's proper or reasonable to try to take any one of those out of the three. But you're right. The last sentence says any action must be started within 1 year after the date of loss.
We have a 15-year statute of limitations for written contracts in our state. That's
correct.
The public policy of Ohio.
Right.
And by contract, it's being modified to a 1 year period.
Right.
And what I'm concerned about is what does start mean?
Right.
As opposed to file in a court of competent jurisdiction, something we'd all understand.
Sure. Would it have been better to say, to use your language? Probably so. But if you look at the start of that clause, which says suit against us, and then it says
any action must be
well, started. That's the third sentence. But I'm saying the first one says suit against us, then it says no action can be brought, and then the third says any action must be started. So what I'm saying is that you're correctly asking about that third sentence, but I think it has to be read in conjunction with the first two, which clearly indicate that we're talking about a lawsuit and not about some other event, if you will.
Counsel, I'm interested in the waiver issue. There appears to be two separate parts to the waiver. There's one in which Nationwide sent a check and essentially admitted liability, but the claimant returned the check.
Right.
But there's still an admission of liability. You're not claiming that they're the claimant cannot file on that one, as opposed to the additional damages or claims that they want?
I think that there was a partial admission of liability and clearly a partial denial of liability. The insurance company essentially said, we owe this much, but we don't owe anything else. And that was in Hounshell, which is one of the more recent Supreme Court cases from this court in 1981, it said not all offers of settlement constitute a waiver. And if in fact the insurance company says, this is how much we think we owe and we're not going to pay any more than that, that's not an admission or a waiver of the policy provision under that scenario. In fact, I think this case was almost exactly fit the language in Hounshell.
Is it a waiver of the part they admitted liability to and owed, or are you saying the 1 year applies even to that? Now it's too late even to get back the amount that they sent the check to the individual.
Well, I think that if the plaintiff or the policyholder were to come back and say, okay, if you say you owe the $6,000, and I'm sure Nationwide would consider paying that. They've always said they owed it. He just kept sending the check back. So, you know, I would think that would be the case.
On the facts of this, there appears to be some dispute as to whether the quantity of proof that was offered to establish the damages was lacking. Is that a fair reading of this?
From the standpoint of the policyholder, that
yes.
He never established any damages. I think that was true. In fact, he did not submit any kind of a report from any type of expert or anything, or even an estimate, I don't believe, till after the 1 year period had expired.
There was something from an engineer referenced
right.
in one of the letters, but we couldn't find it
right.
in the record.
That's what I'm referring to. I don't think that was ever submitted until after the 1 year period had expired. And I don't think it ever became an issue in the lower court as to what that said or didn't say or anything else of that nature. And in fact, I don't think after that letter of August was sent, I don't think anything, the policyholder never responded. There was never any more communication until suit was filed several months later. So I think I have about a minute and a half left of my time. So I'll just, unless there's some other questions, I'll just reserve that for final statement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. McGee.
Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, may it please the court, my name is David McGee. I have the privilege of appearing before you on behalf of Dennis Dominish in this matter. I kept hearing a statement over and over again that certain parts of that limitation of action need to be read in conjunction with, was stated at least three times. I think that's somewhat prophetic in that every one of the three cases that Nationwide submits to this court for consideration, that the language in this case is not ambiguous, uses a conjunction. It's one long sentence that says, suit against us, no action may be brought, started, unless you fully comply with the terms of the policy and start the action within 1 year.
What do you interpret action to be then if it's not suit?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, this is a standalone sentence at the end, and it says any action must be started within 1 year. And I don't know what, when you use the word started, I have filed suits. Suits are commenced. They're not started. I've never heard that
doesn't
term.
Commence one mean starts to start? A claim. Doesn't commence mean to start? Start means to commence?
I think it can mean both, Your Honor. And I question one of the cases cited to this court, the Metz case, if you want to see language that makes it clear, it talks about a suit must be commenced within a court of competent jurisdiction within 1 year. It makes it very clear. Here we have one sentence.
But if you don't interpret this language to mean you have to file a suit, what action is it talking about? It's certainly not talking about just negotiating, presenting a demand. That all our case law flies against that being a start.
Well, an action can be, obviously an action can encompass filing a suit, a lawsuit. There's no question about that.
But what
an
else?
An action can also mean some other endeavor, and I quoted the dictionary to you.
But in the context of a policy dispute with your insurance company, what other action are you thinking qualifies? Don't give me a dictionary definition. You tell me what an action qualifies here.
Oh, certainly, the commencement of a claim, the filing of a proof of loss.
I think that's what, all you have to do is file a proof of loss and you've qualified for a 1 year?
I think when you have that as a standalone sentence and it is coupled with the word started as opposed to filed or commenced or something that would clearly involve to tip
can
to a normal
can you give me any
litigation.
Case law that has equated filing a proof of loss as the satisfying a statute of limitations?
There's no question that Mr. Dominish started a claim, timely.
Can you give me any case law that equates the filing of a proof of loss as satisfying a statute of limitations?
Well, he started the process, Your Honor, and that's the word that Nationwide chose. And they chose the word started, they chose the word action,
you don't
and
have
they
any
didn't
case,
chose not to define them.
You don't have any case that interprets that as a start of an action.
What I have is the three cases that Nationwide has cited that uses completely different language that is quite different than what's here. I would submit to the court, however, that issue is really moot. Because the essential, however this court rules on that issue, it still presents the issue that there is a genuine issue of fact of whether or not Nationwide waived that 1 year limitation of action, even if this court determines that it's clear. Now, I also heard it said that Nationwide made several statements that we owe this much and we'll pay nothing else. Well, I'd like Mr. Duplicar to show you where in the record that says that, because I've not been able to find it. Instead, what Nationwide did was they sent a settlement check twice, admitting liability in a claim. They initially did a partial denial saying, we're not gonna cover mold and we're not gonna cover structural damage to your roof because the damage is from deterioration. And that's part of that is where the conversation started. It didn't become clear until after the suit was filed to Nationwide that my client had built a roof on top of a roof. And so there was structural damage to the building, and that's why the engineer's report, and there was damage for that, and the negotiation was ongoing. There was a letter of April 5th, which I believe is at transcript 27 of the file from Nationwide prior to the expiration of the 1 year term that said, you know, we're gonna get an engineer out there. That was told several times to my client. And it's in the record, Nationwide's correspondence prior to the 1 year, you know what, we're gonna get an engineer out there to look at this issue. They never did, of course, and when the 1 year approached, Mr. Dominish hired his own engineer and sent them the report.
Was Mr. Dominish represented by an attorney during this 1 year period?
Was he
represented by an attorney during this 1 year?
No, Your Honor.
So it was not until the 1 year had expired that he went and got legal counsel?
Correct.
Okay.
He came to my office, I want to say June or July, of as the second year approached. And I looked at the provision, I looked at the correspondence, and I filed, and particularly looked at the letter of August 16, 2007, which
normally an attorney, if it had been representing him all along and had this sort of partial denial, would and knew that there were still negotiations, would file suit, not serve it, protect the record, and go from there. But you never had that opportunity.
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. I mean, Mr. Dominish is an elderly gentleman, disabled, and dealing with the insurance company directly on his own behalf. I would like to believe that any competent attorney would have either made clear by correspondence that they were indeed waiving the limitation in the policy, regardless of whether that language was ambiguous or not, or have filed suit in a timely fashion.
Excuse me.
It doesn't change. Yes,
sir. I have one question. With response to the letter, the last letter that Nationwide sent after the 1 year expired, did your client respond to that letter? Because I thought I read that he never even responded to that final letter, and the next inquiry was the lawsuit.
Well, no, actually, discussions continued. If you see that that letter says, yes, we're going to go out and have an engineer inspect it. Now, that promise had been made to Mr. Dominish both before and after the 1 year limit. This letter of April, I think it's April 7th, before the 1 year, said the same thing. We'll have an engineer go out there and look at this structural issue and these other issues that you're raising. And at no time, and Hounshell does address what Your Honors had addressed, at no time did Nationwide said, hey, this is all we're ever going to pay you.
Counsel, before you go into that, the issue about the engineer.
Yes, sir.
At least in the briefs, there looks like there was an attempt by Nationwide to schedule an appointment date, but one never could be concluded or established. So this really, in that, at least is what I read, doesn't appear to be entirely one-sided, that they just blew him off.
Well, and indeed it is one-sided, Your Honor, because Nationwide is sending CYA letters to the insured, trying to make it appear as though he was not cooperating, although that issue really isn't, you know, raised as being substantive here today. In fact, you know, Mr. Dominish was an elderly gentleman who, because of the damage to his home, had been put out of his home. And he had informed the adjuster, and there was no question as the adjuster had, the home was available and open. It was unoccupied, and Nationwide could have come at any time. Mr. Dominish repeatedly asked them, when are you going to have your engineer come out? They continually promised that they were going to do that. And whether they were able to communicate or set a date, he had repeatedly, and as in his affidavit, states, and it's unrebutted, that he made the house was unoccupied and available for them to inspect anytime they wanted. That's the evidence in his affidavit, as is the evidence in the affidavit that both before and after the 1 year period, they had continually made promises to come out, inspect, have an engineer look at it, re-examine, and reevaluate the offer.
Well, counsel, Mr. Dublikar indicates that that's good business, and that they were not obligated to do so, but oftentimes insurance companies will, you know, for a customer that's a longtime customer, et cetera, settle part of it, and then through their business policy actions, not their legal requirements, will continue to see if there's more that a company can do for one of its insureds. And that doesn't constitute a waiver of the 1 year period of that is delineated in the contract.
Well, Your Honor, when the affidavit says that the content of the letter of August 16th, which is after the 1 year, is part and parcel of the representations that were made during the first year, and that fact is unrebutted in the record.
There's also in those letters, isn't there a reminder in the previous letters that you have a year?
There are three letters sent on June 6th. One enclosed a check, and I can't remember what the second letter said. And then there was a three-page letter, which is the typical reservation of rights letter. And somewhere in that letter, yes, it did say that. But the actions after that were all about, we think we're going to get this resolved. Let's get an engineer out there. Let's look at your report. Let's keep going out there. Even after the time had run, the cause of loss needs better defined, as do the damages caused by the covered loss. We're not talking about something they're denying coverage of. They're saying we have to better define the damages which are covered. Another estimate applying proper unit cost to the covered damages may need to be written. Nationwide's wish and willingness to investigate the claim further, not just investigate, in effort to handle it to a proper conclusion. The negotiations were ongoing. Offers were made twice. There was an admission of liability. There was initially a denial of mold and structural liability, but then in subsequent correspondence and discussions, they then yielded on the structural issue, saying, you know what, we need to investigate that. We need to get an engineer out there. When they didn't do that, my client hired an engineer and sent that in, and the result of that was this letter of August 16th, 2007, indicating this loss needs to be better defined. We need to get better estimates. We need to figure out what we're paying you. There's nothing in here that says, as Hounshell requires, if a company in making its offer to insured had made it clear that it had concluded this was the full extent of its liability and that it was refusing to recognize any further liability, it could have relied upon the limitation of action clause in the policy. That's right out of Hounshell, and that is not the facts here. The facts are, quite frankly, totally and completely opposite.
So you're saying a continued investigation, such as is alluded to in these letters, or the potential for further investigation, resolution, however, is to be construed. That offer of the partial settlement and then the fact that they continued to talk to your client is a waiver. By the insurance company?
I think it may be, Your Honor. However, those are not the facts before the court. The fact before the court, as set forth in the affidavit of Mr. Dominish, which is unrefuted, and this August 16th letter says not only are we going to investigate it further, but the cause of loss needs to be better defined. So are the damages. Another estimate may need to be required. And we want to not only investigate this, we want to do all those things, and we want to do that in an effort to handle the claim to a proper conclusion.
Well, what's the definition of proper conclusion? Obviously, your client's definition of a proper conclusion may be very different than the Nationwide definition of a proper conclusion. I don't think that we can hang our hat as that is a promise to pay.
Well, Your Honor, it's certainly a promise to continue to negotiate when it's put in the context of the same letter saying that the cause needs to be better defined as to the covered loss, that we're admitting we cover this loss. We just need to define it better, and we may need to get another estimate. What would a layman think of that? The requirement of Hounshell is to say, no, we've cut you off,
that
and that's never done.
That letter came after the deadline, the one-year deadline, correct?
That's correct.
So how can you waive something after it's passed?
Well, the letter, quite frankly, is offered in conjunction with the unrebutted affidavit of Mr. Dominish filed in the case that says
the unrebutted letters that say, don't sit on your rights. We want to warn you. This is an offer, but we're not waiving anything. So you have a letter before that says we're not waiving. It says you got that three-page letter that you admitted you got. And it says you've got limitations, beware. And then you've got the post letter that you say is a waiver. Well, you want to put them together.
Your Honor, with all due respect, if an insurance company can send out a boilerplate, reservation of rights letter at the very beginning of a case and then completely disregard what it says and writes and represents after that, then I don't know where the line would be and what would constrain an insurance company from acting in good faith.
So get rid of the obligation of insurers to read their policies and their letters?
I think there is certainly an obligation, but again, we get back to the issue of, one, is it clear, and two, was it waived? And there's a concurrent obligation on Nationwide's part. As Hounshell says, if you're going to say this is it and it's never going to be any more, then you owe the insurer the obligation to say so. Hounshell says if you make an offer and you indicate a willingness to continue to discuss that, then you've waived it. If you've held some hope out for a negotiated settlement, you certainly hold hope out when you say, you know, we're going to get another, we're going to get the engineer out there. We're going to take a look at this. We're going to get another estimate. We're going to, maybe another needs to be better defined, and we're going to handle this to a successful conclusion.
But isn't that all part and parcel of what would happen if the company was not waiving its policy provision, but continuing to work with this customer based on prudent business policy as opposed to legal obligation?
Well, I would suggest to the court that that's somewhat one-sided when you can engage in that activity with impunity to say that we're going to continue to work with you, but you know what? Whatever we ultimately say, that's going to be it, and you're never going to be able to contest
that. And that is the case after the 1 year has expired.
And I'm fine with that, Your Honor, if Nationwide had at any time made it clear to my client that that was the case, but they never did.
But the
quite frankly, just the opposite.
The letter that they proffered to him reiterating the 1 year in June that, hey, you've got 1 year, just so you know, there's 1 year here.
I could be wrong, Your Honor, but I don't think there is any reiteration. It's in one letter. It's the June 6th.
No, it's in the policy, and then it is he's reminded of it once this occurrence
in the
happens.
June 6th letter.
Yes.
I don't think there are subsequent letters. In fact, the subsequent letters are just the opposite. The April 7th letter talks about, hey, we're going to get an engineer out there. They just never followed through with that. And if we're going to leave any, if the court is going to leave any of Hounshell intact, Hounshell goes on to say, if the defendant insurance company had intended to rely on its limitation provision, it should have paid plaintiff what it considered to be a reasonable value of the claim and denied liability for anything in excess of that. And it didn't do that. There isn't a letter here that says, here's your $6,400 and we're never going to pay you anymore. Here's your $6,400 and you know what? We want to schedule an engineer to come out there. And that never happens. And then my client gets his own engineer and sends a report, and you've got this letter of August 16th, which again, the facts in this case, the facts before the court established through his affidavit, that this letter of August 16th is part and parcel of the ongoing representations and promises made by Nationwide prior to the 1 year statute of limitations. Contractual limitations.
Mr. McGee, I just want to clarify. The date of loss was July 28th, 2006.
Correct, Your Honor.
And then there's a letter of September 6, 2006, that talks about partial denial of coverage. And that's the letter that also says, I wish to point out the policy states, any suit you wish to file against Nationwide must be done within 1 year pursuant to the following condition. Then it states the policy paragraph. This is September 6, 2006. The 1 year date for filing then would have been July 28, 2007, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that there was this statement made to your client by a letter before the 1 year had run.
I'm sorry, did I say June 6th? It's September 6th.
Of 2006.
I apologize. It's okay. September 6th of 2006.
All right, thank you.
The issue, however, Your Honor, is after that statement is made to the insured, there are representations made to him that we're going to consider these additional issues. We're admitting liability, particularly as to the contents, and here's a proffer check. And we are committed to continuing to look at this, have an engineer inspect it, reevaluate the appraisals, come up with a better cost unit comparison. In other words, we're talking about negotiating the dollar.
You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Dubliccar, you have a little over a minute.
In my limited time, I would like to point the court to the letter of June the 6th of 2007. This is not quite 2 months before the 1 year period expires. In regards to Mr. McGee's statement that nowhere did it say that they were denying the claim and that they weren't going to do anything else, in that letter, which is relatively short and it's attached to the merit or to our brief in the Court of Appeals, it says, number one, they are enclosing a copy of the original estimate. He's enclosing for the second time a check for the actual cash value amount. It says you have been previously asked to provide Nationwide with dates that an inspection by an engineer may take place, and you indicated that you were not able to meet any of those dates, so they referenced the engineer. Then it says you have been asked to return a properly completed non-waiver agreement, which he did not do. And then it says, most importantly, the check enclosed payable to you and the last known mortgage holder on the property is at this time closing the claim. If you wish to pursue the claim further, please contact my office. So the idea that they had at no point in time denied the claim, I think, is just not borne out by the evidence.
Counsel, the $6,400, what happened to it? The $6,400, what's happened to it?
Well, he returned it to Nationwide. He okay. marked void on the check and sent it back.
And if you prevail here,
right.
what happens?
I suspect that if counsel for the plaintiff were to say, you know, send us back the check that he returned marked void, I would suspect Nationwide would do that.
But they'd be under no obligation to do that.
You know, that's a question that was asked in the Court of Appeals, and I'm not sure I know the answer as in terms of do they have an obligation. They've already said they owed it, and they sent him the check twice, and he sent it back. So from Nationwide's point of view, I suspect they would feel like they owe it, and they would send him the check.
But no legal duty.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I can't answer that question about whether they have a legal duty or not. Under the policy, I would say yes. Under the policy, they have an obligation to pay what's covered, and they've already acknowledged that that was covered. And they would have sent the check twice. I would imagine they'd send it back again.
Thank you, Mr. Dubliker.
Thank you very much.
We will take the matter under consideration, and you will be notified of our opinion. We will now have a recess.